You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
So, hey, we've been making this podcast for over 2.5 years.
What?
Yep, thanks to listeners like you. And from the gate, people have asked us for merchandise or additional content or even some hang time with me and Scott.
That's weird.
It is. But we think we have a solution for you.
Yep, we are excited to announce that we have a new Patreon page.
Yeah, and you know how people are patrons of the arts? Well, in this case, we're the arts.
Hmm. And by becoming a Patreon, you'll get bonus content, access to outtakes that the general public will never see, extremely cool merch, and depending on what tier you get on, a monthly hang time with Laura and I.
Yep, and it all starts at just $5 a month.
That's nothing.
Right? Not per day, not per week. It's only $5 per month.
And you're guaranteed merchandise.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So click the link in the show notes to read about the different tiers and see what great stuff you can get. Become a podcast patron. Join our Patreon today at www.patreon.com/theonlyoneintheroom.
Our team needs a little rest and vitamin D after this crazy 2021 year. We've been working really hard and we need a little break. But don't worry, we'll be back on January 4th with new episodes in season 12. In the meantime, we're going to be bringing you some of your favorite episodes from the year 2021.
Yes, we are. And yeah, these are your favorites, which is so great. We love to be able to do this. One of your favorites was Robert Cabrera, who was the only one who survived a genocide and landed on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list.
Craziest journey,
right?
Huh?
What a feat. We have Jessica Frew, who's the only one who was still in love with her gay ex-husband.
I love that story.
Yeah, that's one of our favorites, too. Wally Green, the only one who saved his life with ping pong, which is an unbelievable story.
Mm-hmm.
Chad Foster, the only one who improved his vision by losing his eyesight. I particularly like the Scott talks on this one.
Powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nick North, the only trans dad of 5. So much joy. You have to listen to Nick.
I've never heard this story before.
No. Mm-mm. And then we're going to do, Scott and I, because you've asked for it, a holiday special where we talk about the year and wrap it up and probably talk some more about our own respective stories and our story together.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're gonna end it with Mikel Vega, who was one of our most powerful episodes of 2021.
Thank you guys so much for a great year, and I hope you enjoy this month.
Yes, and happy holidays to all of you, whatever you celebrate. If you're not celebrating anything, just, you know, join us and enjoy the ride, and we'll be back on January 4th with our 12th season.
Enjoy the show.
I'm Wally Green, and I'm the only one who can say ping pong has saved his life. He says, hey, I want to invite you to my house. I went there, I met his family, played ping pong with them, and I think the reason why he brought me there was to give me a sense of what a real family is, right? Because, I mean, I can't think of any other reason why you would bring this dangerous kid to meet your family.
Right.
And so then after that, you know, he says, hey, you know, I really want to help you. I have a connection in Germany, and I'm going to pay for you to go learn ping pong in Germany.
Imagine that everyone you grew up with was destined for jail or an early death. celebrity table tennis pro and co-founder of Spin New York, Wally Green joined a gang while growing up in one of the most dangerous housing projects in Brooklyn, and was constantly abused by his stepfather, who told him repeatedly that he would never amount to anything. But what would you do if someone noticed you and offered to pay you to go to Germany to play at an elite ping pong school? Would you laugh in their face and continue to live a life filled with violence? Or would you take him up on his offer and leave the streets behind you? Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all-too-familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they, too, had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show. Wally Green. Hello. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm so glad you're here. I wanted to just start off the interview because you are a professional ping pong or table tennis player. Tell me, do you have an entrance theme song?
Entrance theme song?
Yeah.
Oh, man. The only time I have an entrance theme song is when we're opening up new locations of our ping pong club.
Okay. And what is that song, please?
It's a French song. You might not know it. It's a French hip hop.
Yeah, I would not know it, I'm sure.
Yeah, but, no, but what's it called? Somebody in France might know.
That's true.
I don't even remember the name.
Okay. You're going to have to get us that track one day.
Yeah, yeah, we'll mention it goes pretty hard.
We'll try to open the podcast with that track.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. You can give it to us afterward.
Oh, but actually, the one thing you don't know about me is I'm also a rapper. So I made the world's first hip-hop song about ping pong, and it's called A Game Nobody Knows.
Oh, that's right. That's actually in your bio, which I was about to read. Yes. So, yeah. So you can rap a few bars of that for us. No?
Nah.
Maybe at the end.
Come on,
maybe at the end. Come on. Okay.
Yeah, he's got to get to know us a little better.
Yeah, that's true. He's got to trust us. We got to build that trust factor. All right. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hey, honey.
So today we are talking to Wally Green.
I know, this is pretty cool.
This is actually one of the coolest stories I've ever heard. He's a celebrity table tennis pro, entertainer, and co-founder of Spin New York. This is what he says. Just about everything I do in my life involves the sport of table tennis in some way or another. He has represented the U.S. in over 40 international competitions and over 20 plus countries, even, get this, hun, North Korea.
Get out.
He has worked with video game giant Rockstar Games to create the first real life table tennis video game for the Xbox 360, which is huge. He has also created the world's first hip-hop song, which we were just talking about table tennis. It's called A Game Nobody Knows.
Mm.
Yeah. So we're going to get to hear a little bit of that at the end, apparently. So we'll wait for that.
So a little side note, Wally, is Laura and I's first game that we ever bonded on was ping pong.
Yep.
Wow.
It is. The people who listen to the podcast know this. Scott and I met 13 years ago in treatment, like drug and alcohol treatment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was a ping pong table there, and I had never played, and he taught me to play there.
And now she is fiercely
competitive. Now I kick his ass. I am really competitive.
Yeah, we can't even play for fun anymore.
But we do have a ping pong table in our backyard, and we have for a long time because of that.
It was really useful at the beginning of COVID, too, for the first 6 months. It was after dinner. Let's go play a little ping pong.
Mm-hmm. We have a great affection for the game.
We do.
Wally, I start off every interview by asking how our guests identify. How do you identify?
What do you mean?
Well, okay, so for some people, they identify by race, they use their pronouns, they identify by their profession.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whatever you say.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of it in your bio, right? You identify as a celebrity table tennis pro.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I do want to talk about your family of origin and growing up in Brooklyn. You described it to me like your parents were like Ike and Tina Turner, your stepfather and your mother.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So my mom and my dad, I think they divorced. Actually, I don't even know when they divorced. I don't have any recollection of them being together. So there's no image in my mind of them ever being together. So I'm thinking they had to divorce probably between the ages of 1 and 2. My mom remarried another guy who came from Barbados, from the islands. He was very abusive to my mom, like extremely abusive. Like, you know, he would hit her, he would punch her, choke her, grab her. So as a young kid growing up, I saw all of this all the time. I grew up watching this kind of behavior from my stepfather.
Yeah. Did you ever try to intervene or interfere? I mean, I know you were little, but... Did you ever?
No, because I also got hit and stuff. And so I was really too young to do anything when it first started. And then, of course, my mom had another child, which was from him. Mm-hmm. And that child would get treated differently than me.
How so?
Well, because that child was his son. Mm-hmm. So I remember on many occasions where I would do something wrong and force him to say he did it. Because I knew he wouldn't get in trouble for it.
Yeah.
If I was the older brother, and if I did something or break something, I would say, yo, you have to say you did it.
And he would do it?
Yeah, because he was scared of me.
Ah, okay.
But he wouldn't get in trouble for it. If I said I did it, then I would get in trouble for it.
I completely understand that. It was him, right, that was telling you repeatedly that you were no good and that you would never amount to anything, your stepfather?
My stepfather always said things like, you know, you're never going to go anywhere. You're never going to amount to anything. You're going to be in jail for the rest of your life. And always, I don't even think there was ever one time there was a positive word that was said. Mm-hmm. And the thing that made it even crazier for me growing up was that my stepfather was completely illiterate. So he couldn't read or write, but he was a master carpenter, like the best of the best of the best. So because he had that skill, he was able to excel at a high level without being able to be literate. So on many occasions, anything that came to the house, like, for example, I kind of dreaded the days where he would get new equipment because he always loved to have like this fancy music equipment and stuff, right? Yeah. But I would have to read the instructions, and I hated it because I had no interest in that.
Right. And it meant like spending that one-on-one time with him as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I would have to read the instructions and stuff like that. And
So you told me that you described yourself as like an angry kid. Is that right?
Yes.
And can you just tell me how that played out in your life?
So I think because I used to watch my mother get beat up all the time, and it wasn't like, you know, it's one thing when you're abusing someone. It's one thing when you do it behind closed doors.
Yeah.
But it's another thing when you do it in front of the kid that's standing here watching.
Yes.
That's where my anger started from. My anger started from that, knowing that my mom was getting beat up and I couldn't do anything about it. I mean, to the point where as I got a little older, I had these crazy thoughts in my mind of what of the things that I could do to, I don't know what's a better word, but kill him. I mean, I can't think of another word. Yeah. And I had so many ideas in my head. And this is young. This is like, we're talking about 10, 11, where I was thinking of putting boric acid in his capsules for his pills that he took. Like I had all kinds of crazy ideas. The old putting socks in the muffler thing. Like all kinds of crazy things were going through my head as a kid.
Yeah.
And that's what led me to join gangs at a young age.
How old were you when you first joined a gang?
between 12 and 13.
And so tell me about that. What was that like?
I really didn't want to be home. And I was just struggling with the fact that this was going on. I couldn't do anything about it. And I had so much anger inside of me that had to get out. I joined a gang that was in my projects. Mm. And I also had to do it. I mean, I'm not saying that that forced me to join a gang. I probably would have most likely did it anyway, because there were two other gangs and you usually got to join one or you get beat up by all three. But that was the force that pushed me mm-hmm. to go and do it. I joined the gang at a young age, between like 12 and 13. And actually by the end of 13, I already acquired 6 guns at 13 years old.
Damn.
I mean, they all weren't mine,
right,
but they were in my possession half the time. Mm-hmm. And half the time they were in other people's possession. I need to say this exactly because sometimes I don't say it exactly, but at any given time, there could have been 6 guns in my possession.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel weird about it? Were you proud of it? Or was it just like normal?
Oh, no, I was proud of
it. You're proud of
it. I was like, you know, nobody can do anything to me.
Yeah.
I remember the first time where I actually touched the gun for the first time. Mm. It was like power.
Yeah.
I don't explain it. It's like a rush. You touch it and it's like this feeling comes over you that this thing that you have is all powerful and you can do anything you want as long as you have this in your hand.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're this 13-year-old kid who at any point in time might have 6 guns in his possession. You have this violent home life that you don't want to be around. But then you also turned athletics at some point. Is that right?
Yes. So the way the athletics came from was because I didn't want to be home. So although I was in a gang, still my parents were strict in not letting me be out.
Really?
Right. And then if I wanted to be out, I got punished for it. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, one time I came home late and then my mom said, okay, you want to come home late? Then from now on, you can't come into the house till like 9 p.m. And it's a different thing when your parents say, yeah, you stay out. Don't come home till 9 p.m. than when you have the option to do it or not.
Right.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
I just said, okay, you know, how can I not be home? I don't want to be home. I don't want to be in this house. I don't want to be part of this.
Right. But you need to just be legitimately, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so what I did was I joined every possible sport there was in school. Everything. Basketball, I joined it and I excelled at it. Football, joined it, excel. Volleyball, tennis, wrestling, every sport.
Wow.
Except ping pong, because I hated ping pong at that time. But every sport in my school, I played because that was the way to not be home, because I had practices. You know, some teams like the basketball team had practice early in the morning, so I had to leave the house early. I come back late because practice was after school. By the time I get home, I'm so exhausted. I just don't want to do anything. I just go to my room and go to sleep.
Right.
Or do homework and go to sleep. So that was my way to just not be home without getting in trouble.
But you were an amazing kid, because I'm thinking that I'm assuming you're doing this on your own and you're joining these sports and then getting to these practices and doing homework. And then what did you have to do in the gang? Like what were your duties there?
We just did a lot of real dumb stuff.
Like what?
Not like rob people. I was never into the whole drug selling stuff, although there were other people that did do that.
Yeah.
I was more of the fighter. Like if we had beef, then I was ready to go.
Right.
If someone said, yo, this guy did something with whatever, you know, we got to go take care of him, I was ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
We did really dumb stuff. Like we used to ride the trains in groups to kind of rob people.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I read about that actually, not you, but about how when people were getting robbed on subways.
Oh yeah. 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 Because what happens is if you go with 10, 15 people and someone's sitting on the subway,
right,
no one can see what's going on with the 10, 15 people are robbing someone, because no one can really see what's going on. And of course that person is not going to really scream out because there are 10 or 15 people here.
Right. They're terrified.
Yeah, I
did. I read about that. We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
So you have every sport that you want to play or that gets you out of the house you're playing. And I'm jumping now to around age 18. And you said before you hated ping pong, like that was the one sport you wouldn't touch. Why did you hate it? What was wrong with it?
Because I remember when we would come from practice, especially from football practice. So the way we get to the football field is through the lunchroom. Mm-hmm. And then we'd come back through the lunchroom. And in the lunchroom, there would always be kids playing ping pong. And it just looked so funny. So I would come through and say, look at these kids with shorts and a stick. Like, it was just funny. It was just such a funny, weird thing to see.
Right.
Like, you know, and I really never took the time to even look at the sport. Like,
right.
it was like, just walk through and laugh, make fun of them, and just keep it moving.
Yeah. So you're thinking, like, this isn't even really a sport, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
And, you know, you're not looking at strategy or athletic prowess
Nothing. I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
All right. And then just tell me, what was your high school again? What high school did you go to?
Went to Lafayette.
Lafayette. And that's in Brooklyn?
Brooklyn, okay. Yeah.
All right. So then tell me about, I think you were in like a pool hall. Is that it? When you saw those guys playing. Tell me that story.
I was taking a break from the sports because the season was ending and I found a new sport, which was shooting pool. Mm. And I managed to steal a pool stick, a really expensive one.
Sorry.
But I didn't really, it was stealing. I mean, what I did was I bought a pool stick and then I went to take it back. And the guy said, you can exchange it for what's in that box over there.
Mm.
But when he wasn't looking, I took one from the rack, from the top rack, and I took the sticker off and brought that to him.
Okay.
I mean, I guess it's his fault for not noticing.
It's his fault. I love it.
So, yeah.
Go ahead.
So I had this pool stick, really expensive pool stick. And the pool stick was sort of like how guns were. It made me powerful.
Mm.
You know, I got an expensive pool stick, so I got to be good, right? So I went to a pool hall to shoot some pool. And I saw some guys playing that I thought weren't good. Now, I didn't suck. I had some skill. I have a skill in every sport I play. So I didn't suck, but I just thought I was a lot better than I was. And I saw some guys and I said, hey, you want to play? And they were like, how much are you trying to play for?
Mm.
And I was like, all right, let's play for some money. And they were like, all right, how much you want to play for? And I said, $50. I didn't really have $50, by the way. I mean, I had it, but I didn't have it to give it away.
Right.
But I didn't think I could lose because I had a great pool stick. And yeah, I got smoked and I had to pay the $50.
Mm.
And I was really pissed off about that. And so out of anger, I took the pool stick and I just hit it on the pool table and it shattered.
Wow.
So now I broke this expensive pool stick and I was really pissed off. And I just turn around and I see two kids playing ping pong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went over there and I think I was going over there as a bully because I really had no interest to play the sport, but I didn't want to play any more pool. Plus I had no pool stick. And I just saw something that I could just release my anger on.
Yeah.
And it was on the sport that I didn't like and the kids that were playing the sport that I didn't like.
Right.
I went over there and I says, hey, I want to get a hit. Like I didn't, it wasn't even asking.
Yeah.
It was demanding.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay. And they gave it to me and the guy hit the ball to me. And out of anger, I just hit the ball really hard and it went on the table. Right. The guy was like, oh my God, do you play? And I was like, no, I've never played the sport. And they was like, there's a club in Midtown. You got to go check out this club. You got to go check out this club. And I said, what? There's a club for this? Like, this is an actual thing. And they were like, yeah, man. And I was like, you got to be kidding, right? And they're like, no. And so eventually I went to this club and I saw people playing for real. And I was like, whoa, man, this is crazy. Like people were athletic and they were hitting the ball from far from the table and hitting it hard. And then I got a little interested, but then nobody would play with me.
Why not?
Because I couldn't play and they didn't know me.
Okay.
And so I was really getting pissed off because the things that kept going through my mind was like, you know, this is crazy. Everybody trying to disrespect me.
Mm.
I'll shoot up this whole place.
Right.
Like I was just angry. Now I was even more angry.
Were you still carrying your guns then?
Did you always have
a weapon on you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was even more angry, but I always like to go to the places where I'm not wanted.
Mm.
So I just kept going there. And then eventually a guy would play with me. sometimes. And this guy was like, I think at the time was like over 60, and he would kill me. And that's kind of made me wanted to play more because I was like, how can this old guy beat me? I'm a seasoned athlete. I play every sport, you know. And then for a while, I didn't have a partner. And a guy came up to me and he says, hey, do you have a partner? And I said, no. And the guy goes, well, I'll pay you $20 every time you play with me. I was like, what?
Oh.
$20. So $20 was a hustle because back then I didn't have any money, right? Yeah. So $20 was a lot of money. It was a hustle. I could get $20 just to hit some balls and I suck.
Yeah.
But like I said, when I first pick up a sport, I'm usually better than the average person.
Okay.
From the first time.
Right.
Like every sport, I'm just good at sports. And okay, so I would hit with this guy and
did you ever question his motive? Like why?
No, of course not. No, it's $20. No way. It's 20. Once he said $20,
yeah,
I was in.
Okay.
I was in. $20, let's do it. So I would play with this guy and he would pay me the $20, you know, cash, of course. It was cool. And then, you know, we started doing it very often. And I would talk to him just about my life and things that I was going through, mm-hmm. right? Because he was sort of like a older friend, mm-hmm. right? And so I would talk to him and say, yeah, you know, this is what I do with my gang, blah, blah. And for him,
you were,
it was like,
oh, wait, you were telling him like your real life.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, him, go ahead.
I was telling him like my real life.
Yeah.
You know, I was always never scared to tell people because I felt nobody could do anything to me anyway.
Right.
So it didn't matter.
And he wasn't intimidated by that. He was like more intrigued.
Well, for him, I think it was like TV.
Right.
So here's the thing. If you've never met or never been around anyone who's lived that kind of life,
yeah.
there's no possible way that you can understand it. Mm-hmm. It's totally impossible because if someone told you, yo, this 13-year-old just got caught with 6 guns, you'd be like, what? Really? Oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah.
If you told me that, I'd be like, oh yeah, oh man, it's messed up.
Right. You're not surprised.
I know. Yeah. Right. I'm not surprised at all. So for him, it was like a TV show. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why I was comfortable talking around him because I knew for him it was like a TV show.
Right.
One day I went to the club, the gun fell in my bag and he saw it.
Yeah.
And when he looked at it, he looked at me. The look on his face was priceless. I mean, I still see it right now as I'm talking to you. I see his face. And I just was like, yo, I got to go. So I picked it up and I just left.
So wait, what was the look on his face?
As if everything that I've been telling him.
Yeah.
Had just came into play.
So he like knew it was real then.
Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trying to hang around to see what he was going to do.
Right.
Cause maybe he might call the police.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what he's going to do. So I left. And the first thing I thought about was like, there goes my $20. I've lost my $20. The only thing that was in my head was that $20.
Okay. Wait, I have another question before we keep going.
Yeah.
So what was the racial makeup of this club?
A lot of people from the islands, from the Caribbean.
From the Caribbean, okay. Yes, so you were probably like one of the younger American people there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of brothers there?
Yeah, a lot, because a lot of Caribbean players.
Okay, all right, so keep going, sorry.
You know, I thought, there goes my $20. Well, you know, felt bad, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, for sure, he's never going to call me again.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't call me again.
Right.
But 2 days later, he called me. He says, hey, are we still playing? And I was like, what? And so then at this point, I started to question a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's $20, man. So I was like, I got to get that $20. So I went to go meet him and we played. And one thing, which I mentioned a lot, he never mentioned anything about it.
Mm.
Like he never said, he just never talked about it. He never mentioned about what he saw to me.
Mm-hmm.
He acted like it never happened. And so that was a little worrying too, because at least if you talk about it, I kind of know where your head is
right.
regarding the situation. But if you don't talk about it, then I don't know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but the $20 was more important than all of that. So I kept playing with him. And then after playing with him, he says, hey, I want to invite you to my house in the mountains. And I was like, what?
Mm.
Yeah, you know, and I'm wondering why this guy wants to bring me to his house in the mountains.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. But, you know, it's okay, you know, whatever. So I go with him. He had a house, which is 2.5 hours away from New York City,
mm-hmm.
near Hunter Mountain,
okay.
near the ski resort, like very close to the ski resort. I went there. I met his family, played ping pong with them. And I think the reason why he brought me there was to give me a sense of what a real family is, right? Because, I mean, I can't think of any other reason why you would bring this dangerous kid to meet your family.
Right.
Unless he was trying to show me without telling me that this is how family's supposed to be.
Yeah, that there's another way for a family to be, right?
Right. And so then after that, you know, he says, hey, you know, I really want to help you. And I have a connection in Germany, and I'm going to pay for you to go learn ping pong in Germany.
Wow.
Right. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah. That was the first start of how I started to really get into the sport of ping pong.
So had you fallen in love with it yet, ping pong? Or were you still just thinking that this was like a means to an end? Was it just $20?
No. I started liking the sport. Like ping pong is a sport that's really addictive from the beginning.
Yeah.
So once you start playing it, one small adjustment gets a huge reward. Mm. So it's not like most sports. Like most sports, small adjustments equal small rewards. Mm-hmm. In this sport, the smallest adjustment is a huge reward.
Yeah.
So you feel immediately you're getting better immediately. So it makes it very addictive. Mm. So I was already like, this, oh man, this sport is great.
Yeah.
I was in. Yeah.
So were you?
So when he said that.
Were you excited?
I was worried, excited. I mean, I had a bunch of emotions. The only thing I knew about Germany at the time was Hitler.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why is this dude trying to send me to Germany?
Right.
So that's the only thing I knew. But I was also excited because I knew it'd be a chance to go somewhere different.
That's amazing that first of all, that encounter in the pool hall, and you're going over there to kind of bully those guys. And then they're like so impressed by your talent that they're not bullied. They're like, hey, you should go play at this club. That's crazy. And then to fall in with this guy who is really mentoring you, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, there could have been a lot of other guys that you could have fallen in with that wouldn't have done that. But this guy was a true mentor to you. And now you have this opportunity to leave Brooklyn for the first time. Is that right?
Yep. And the thing was, he was mentoring me without mentoring me.
Right. It wasn't in a relationship like your mentor mentee. He just was showing
right.
you.
And he wasn't like, I think if he would have mentioned about that gun, I probably would have shied away from him for sure.
Ah, so he did the right thing.
But the fact that he just never, it was never a conversation. Like he never once said, hey, why are you walking around with a gun for?
Mm-hmm.
He never once even mentioned it.
Right.
And the fact that he never once mentioned it was probably the reason why I kind of like took him up on the offer.
Yeah.
Like more deeply.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about Germany.
Oh yeah. So I'm still this angry kid. Nothing has changed except the fact that I got an all paid trip to go to Germany.
Mm.
You know, I get to Germany and I live in a school with a bunch of other athletes from different sports. So the best athletes in that town or that city, they all live in this school.
Mm.
And sports is most of their curriculum, and then comes the education.
Interesting.
So these are like the potential Olympic athletes, the potential professional athletes.
Mm-hmm. What part of Germany was it?
It was in Hanover.
Okay.
The first, I want to say, month, right, 3 weeks to a month, was probably the most difficult for me, because I was this angry kid. I didn't like anybody. I didn't want to like anybody. And I wanted to fight everybody.
Mm.
So these kids were trying to be super nice to me. Mm. And they were like, oh my God, you're from America. You're from New York. Whoa, you're amazing. New York's amazing. America's amazing. And the only thing I kept thinking was like, yo, get out of my face before I punch you in yours.
Mm.
Like that's all was on my head. But the problem was it didn't work, because the more angry I got inside, the more nicer they became.
Yeah.
So like, there's this thing that you hear a lot, and it's called killing you with kindness. Mm-hmm. That's like a real thing. Being killed with kindness is official. I've experienced it. And when it happens to you, your brain comes confused. You become so confused because you want to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
You want someone to say something. The only thing in your head is, oh, let this kid just say one stupid thing. Let him say, but the stupid thing's not coming.
Right.
And you just keep saying in your head, let him say one more. Doesn't come.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now you get confused.
Mm.
So for like a month, I was just confused as to what's my purpose? Like what's going on? Mm-hmm. And then eventually I figured out that, hey, you know, you're not in America, number one. You're not in the gang, number two.
Mm.
And number three, you're around people that actually want to know you and actually are being genuine and liking you. Because, you know, when you grow up like the way I grew up, if people try to be really, really nice to you, you better watch out.
Right.
Because there's some setup going on. And there's something that's not right. Like, no one is that nice. Mm-hmm. So that's how we grow up, like that, not trusting anybody.
Yeah.
Especially, I'd rather trust a person who's being really evil than the person who's being really nice. Because at least the person being really evil, I know, okay, yeah, he's evil. All right, I know.
Right.
The person being really nice, I don't know what the motive is.
Yes. You
know, it's hard to trust. And so eventually, I just figured out that, man, I'm angry for no reason. Like, I have no reason to be angry.
Wow. Right?
And I started to open up more.
I was going to say, you were literally disarmed, right? Because you didn't have your weapons, I'm assuming.
Nope.
You didn't take those with you. And then they disarmed you of your anger, which is your other weapon, right?
I had nothing.
Yeah. Wow. That's so cool. I mean, I don't know that that would have happened any other way if you hadn't been sent away, you know, to that environment, right? So I want to be mindful of our time, and this next story that I want you to tell is so good. So I'm going to kind of jump you to ping pong diplomacy. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yeah. I started playing seriously.
Yeah.
I was able to play for the U.S. team, playing all over the world in every major country. I had a great sponsor, which was Rockstar Games.
Yeah.
So I had money to go play competitions all over the world. And that's what I did. It was my dream. And I did it. And then 1 year I saw that there was going to be a competition. So we can see the competitions online from the International Table Tennis Federation. And we can see maybe 1 year, even 2 years ahead of time. So I saw 1 year ahead of time and I saw that, oh, wow, there's a North Korean Open. And I was like, whoa, man, I want to go there. I definitely have to go there because every year I was trying to do something big, right? So the previous year I went on a Steve Harvey show and that was my big thing for that year. Yeah. And then I saw this tournament. I was like, oh my God, I need to go to North Korea and promote world peace because a very historical moment in American history is 1971 when Nixon was the president. America established relations through China with ping pong, and it's called the ping pong diplomacy. Mm-hmm. Hence, you got the movie Forrest Gump. That's kind of what the movie's about.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, man, I want to repeat this history. I want to do my own. I want to do my very own historical ping pong diplomacy.
I love it.
If that's not something big, I don't know what else is.
Right.
And so I set on that journey to actually do it.
North Korea, for me, sounds like it'd be a really scary journey. Were you not intimidated by the idea of going there? Did you know about it?
Yeah. Because before I went, Dennis Rodman had recently came back.
Right.
And I, like I said, I grew up in the project, so there's not much that scares me.
Right.
So, I mean, if I survived that life, I was 100% sure that nothing in North Korea was going to scare me.
Right.
And I tried to get so many people to go with me. Mm. Like, I reached out to the world. And I was like, hey, guys, I want to do this diplomacy in North Korea. You guys got to come. And they were like, you're crazy. Everybody either said I was crazy or I was going to die or I was not going to come back. I mean, and nobody wanted to go. So I said, okay, I'll go by myself.
Wow.
And that's what I did. I went by myself.
So wait, how did you get to go, though?
Once I saw there was a tournament, I contact the U.S. team because only the U.S. team can enter you into pro tours.
Mm-hmm.
You can't enter yourself. And I say, hey, I want to play this pro tour. And, you know, at first they weren't really like trying to enter, but I said, this is what I want to do. So just make the entry and everything else I'll handle myself.
Uh-huh.
So I did that. And then I got contacted by the Secretary General of North Korea and of Sport. And they said, we're so happy to have you, blah, blah, blah. You would need to get your visa in China, in Beijing.
Mm.
And I had recently just came back from China. So I had to go back to China to go get the visa. So I went and got the visa. Next day, you know, I'm flying in North Korea.
Wow. Did you fly from Beijing to North Korea?
Yes.
And then so what? How did you fly there? What's the airline?
I took an airline called Air Koryo.
Uh-huh.
And that's the one North Korean airline, like China Airlines or Air China, they're actually two different airlines. One of them goes there.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was going, this whole experience, I said to myself, it has to be as real as possible.
Mm.
So I need to take the real North Korean airline. I'm not going to take the Beijing airline, which is probably the safest.
Yeah.
But because the North Korean airline probably is the worst airline on the list of all airlines.
Was it?
Yeah, it is. Probably still is till today.
No, I mean to fly. Well, how was the flight?
Yeah. Oh, it wasn't. It actually wasn't. It was just like any other flight to me.
Okay.
I mean, it definitely was tense. I mean, there were some tense moments. Mm. But, I mean, that's what I signed up for.
Right. Like,
I wanted to get the full feeling of what it was to go and be in North Korea.
Yeah.
And so I took the North Korean airline. And there was one incident which was, like, really funny. When I got on the airline, I noticed that everyone had these pins. Mm-hmm. So they were all wearing these pins, right? And I was wondering, like, what are these pins? Because, you know, those are things that you learn when you live that gang life. Like, you learn to know everything that's around you. I always know what's going on around me, anywhere near me. I always know, you know, if people are doing the same thing, wearing the same thing, I pick it up immediately.
Right.
So I picked up that everyone had this pin on. This little pin, and I started to look closely, and it was, the pin had the picture of either the current great leader, mm-hmm, or his dad and his grandfather, right, or all three.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, man, that's super cool. I want to get one of those. That's the first thing I said, I want to get one of those.
Great.
And so the stewardess, mm-hmm, was actually a really pretty lady, mm, right? And she looked so sweet and so nice, right? And so in my mind, I was thinking, man, this airline doesn't deserve one star. This is like 5 stars.
Right.
Until I asked her about the pin.
Uh-oh.
And then she gave me the dirtiest look I've ever gotten in my life. It was like bone chilling. And
what?
I was like, yeah, this is a 1-star airline now.
You didn't get a pin?
No. Aww. And I tried to get a pin too the whole time. It was not. To skip a little bit. Mm. Those pins are very important.
Mm.
Every citizen has that pin, because I tried to ask my guide about that. And she first ignored me. Then she asked me why I wanted the pin.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to say, well, because I'm in North Korea, I should do like North Koreans do.
Yeah.
But then she said that those pins go to each citizen.
I see.
If you lose that pin, it's a very serious problem.
So no one was giving up their pin then, for sure.
No.
All right. So tell me what happens in that first tournament.
Oh, so I get there. First, I need a practice partner. So actually, I've never talked about this. Mm. This part has never been talked about. I need a practice partner. And there were no Westerners at the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
None. So who could I practice with?
Right.
I mean, either China, Vietnam, Syria. So they arranged a practice partner with a North Korean.
Ah.
And that was pretty funny because when the guy first saw me, it was almost like he saw an alien.
Well, you kind of were there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had bleached hair with all these crazy designs in it.
Yeah.
And being a black dude, he looked at me and you could just tell in his brain, he was like, whoa, mm-hmm, what's going on? But then once I started practicing, then you could tell he was relaxed because he figured out, oh, this guy's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I get to play against China first. And then I got to play against North Korea, which was amazing because when I went there to do this diplomacy for world peace, I had no plan as to how I was going to do it.
Right.
I just knew what I wanted to do, but there was no plan. Right? I just said, the first step is just getting there and then I'll figure it out. And I've always been like that. I'll figure it out. I'm not going to plan it. I'm just going to do it. And whatever happens, happens.
Mm.
And so I had no plan, but I did get to play against a North Korean. I remember when we first walked out. So the way it works is the umpire is going to walk out first with one of the players. Then the second umpire walks out with the other player. And as I was walking out, they had about maybe 5,000 fans in the audience. Mm. And you got to remember, all these fans are from where? North Korea.
Right.
Because there are people in North Korea, except North Koreans. As I was walking out, you could feel like all these eyes on your body.
Mm.
Right? Because I stand out.
Yes.
Black dude, bleached hair with these crazy designs in it. They were probably saying, oh my God, what's going on? Yeah. People, like, you could feel it. You could feel everyone looking at you.
Wait, how many people were there?
About 5,000.
Wow. Okay.
And so you can feel it. It's crazy, the feeling. And then so I walk out and then we get to the tables and I check the paddles, whatever. We start to play.
Mm-hmm.
And once it started 0-0, that whole feeling went out the window, and now I'm on like focus mode.
Yeah.
And I started to go up pretty quickly. I went up to 5-0, and one game goes to 11. So I was already halfway there at 5-0. And every time I made a point, the crowd would make this sound like, mm.
like they were disappointed.
It was. But picture, now picture 5,000 people making this sound. It's weird. It's so weird. It's the weirdest thing ever. And I was like, whoa. The first time he did it, I was like, whoa, that's nuts. Right? I'll make another one. Oh, my God. It was just crazy. Right? But I was like, all right, whatever. I'm going to beat this dude, man. So I kept playing. And then he made one point. Mm-hmm. And they started clapping. Ah. And it was pretty loud. Louder than any clap I ever heard when I was playing someone.
Right.
Because I'm usually the underdog. And then he made another point and it got really loud. Mm. The third point, then it got so, that third point was like he just won the Olympics.
Wow.
It was loud. People were clapping and cheering. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And so I couldn't focus.
Yeah.
I couldn't concentrate because it was so loud. And so I just took a step back and I looked up. And I just smiled, right? I don't know why. I actually don't even know why I smiled. Normally, I would say, yo, shut the F up. Mm. Like, I would flip out. Like, and I've done it before in other tournaments where I've like flipped out. But this time it was different. And I just looked up and I just smiled. I just laughed because it was funny and it was weird. They saw me laugh and smile. And then they started laughing and smiling. And now I was like, wait a minute. This is even more weird now.
Right.
So then I play again. He won a little point. I look up. They'd clap. I look up. And then I would laugh. And then they would laugh. Wow. And I was like, oh, my God. I said, this is where it's going to happen. Mm. It's going to happen right here. So everything just came to me at once. How was I going to make this difference? Mm-hmm. How was I going to promote world peace? This was the start of it. And I knew it. And I said, all right, this is where it's at. Because now I've captured all this audience. I've already captured them. So now I got to keep this. So I stopped focusing on winning the match, just playing through the motions and kept focusing on the crowd. Mm. I would look up and laugh and they would laugh. I would look up and laugh and they would laugh.
Yeah.
Right? So now I had this connection. And then, of course, the North Korean wind up beating me. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, you know, at the end of each match, you have to shake hands.
Yeah.
Right? You could tell that he didn't want to shake my hand. Really? Mm. But you have to because it's sports etiquette.
Right.
And he came up to me and he put his hand out, but it wasn't like, yeah, I want to shake your hand. It was like, eh, maybe I just want to touch your hand and that's it. Uh-huh. So he gave me like this weak limp kind of like,
yeah,
try to touch my hand thing. And I just grabbed him by the arm. I grabbed him by the arm and I pulled him in and gave him the biggest hug he ever had in his life.
Oh, wow. What did he do? What did they do?
So the crowd started cheering and clapping, and my camera filming is actually facing my back, which is his front.
Right.
So his face first goes to like, whoa.
Yeah.
But then there's a smile. There's a brief smile, right?
Yeah.
And so that brief smile is the reason I went all the way to North Korea. Mm. That brief smile, you cannot plan that. You cannot fake that. Mm. That is real. I mean, maybe he might have got in trouble for smiling because a Westerner held him and he liked it. But but nonetheless, it's a real smile. It was real. And then I realized what I've done. You know, you cannot change people or change people's thinking overnight. That's not how it works. But the way it does work is if you plant the seed, right? That hug was the seed that I planted for him and those 5,000 people. Mm. For the rest of his life, he's never going to forget this Black American dude with crazy bleached out hair with designs in it that gave him this big hug.
Yeah.
Those 5,000 people for the rest of their life are never, ever going to forget this Black dude from America with bleached out hair and designs in it who showed them nothing but love, even at a time when they were being really loud and I couldn't concentrate, I still showed nothing but love.
And that's why you were there.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So in the future, if ever, you know, government says, oh, Americans are all evil and they're bad, maybe some people say, well, you know what? I remember
there was one.
A guy that came here and he didn't seem that bad. He gave a hug and everything else. So I don't know. But that's how you do it, man. You plant a seed, and I planted a seed.
Oh, that's so great.
I hope in the future it can grow to something. You never know.
Wally, that is such an incredible story. It's so full of nuance, and there's this, you know, this battle of like, not good and evil, but like hate and love, maybe. And for love to win in the ways that it won inside you, and then how you took that, are taking that out into the world. It's just so beautiful. And then it's ping pong, which is so great. Yeah. And it's North Korea, which is like, we can't even picture it. You know, you've been
I'm
there.
I'm ready for the book and the movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I already got a title of the book.
Tell me.
From the Pistol to the Paddle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm snapping over here. I love it. All right. We have to wrap up, but I just wanted to circle back to your only one statement. Ping pong saved your life. And when you and I talked, you mentioned that a lot of the people that you ran with when you were 13, 14, 15 are not around anymore. Is that right?
Right.
So this is something that literally saved your life.
I think without this sport, I would definitely be in jail for life, mm-hmm. or dead.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, that is incredible. Tell me, you said that the book has a title already. What else is next for you?
I'm working on the documentary for it now. I mean, I have a ton of footage.
Yeah.
You know, we made a documentary about 2 years ago called The Tables that won a ton of awards, almost got into the Oscars. Mm. National Geographic picked it up, and it's about two ping pong tables that I put in Bryant Park 10 years ago. Mm. And it's how these ping pong tables formed a community of the most amazing people from different backgrounds.
Yeah.
Once I did that with this director, then that was the fuel that I said, yo, I have so much footage.
Yeah.
On every day, I should just make this documentary. So I've been kind of working on that, you know, just little by little. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Before I thank you, tell me where people can find you.
The best place to find me is usually Instagram, which is Wally Green NYC, or on my newly made TikTok, which I'm proud of, which is Wally Green NYC _.
Okay. I'm just making sure I'm following you. I think mm-hmm. I am. Yeah, I follow you. Okay, great. Thank you so much for that. And wait, in your website, right?
Yeah, and Wally in the website.
Okay.
The website is Who is Wally Green?
Who is Wally Green? That's right.
.com. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You're incredible. And, you know, we will be watching. We'll be watching you. And I can't wait to see your story on the screen and read the book.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Thanks for sharing your story. It's incredible.
Thank you for having me. Super fun.
With that whack ass serve and that weak ass spin, I do drills for days. I even run in the sun just to dodge the sun rays. I yo, that's what those Chinese say. Every time I rip a ball that goes past their way. So step back, he's about to get smacked. So what you gonna do with this third ball attack? Block? Nah, you won't do that. My top spins heavy like a million gold stacks. Lob? That's like corn on a cob. Now what's a cob with no corn? Just a cob. Who's naked, son? Edge ball, just been robbed. Your game's full of holes like that sponge called Bob. O-O-L-A, that's the name of equipment I use when I play. Using this is like night and day. Got sent some other shit, but then threw it away. With 500 revolutions per sec, I got this, son, so just hand me the check. Cause I'm about to go out blazing. Like Nas, half man, half amazing. I'm not Asian, but I can play this game. And I hit real hard like the Raiders game. Yeah. Best act like you know. Now how you won't win when you're moving so slow. Cho, that's the sound that I make. For every other point I win, I celebrate, I dominate. with just one serve. Side top, that's a top spin with a curve. And if you get that, I got another. Got a whole service factory produced by my rubber. The best sport, real sport, no doubt. So if you know nothing, just shut your mouth.
We play a game that nobody knows. We play a game that nobody's heard of before. We play a game that nobody knows. We play a game that nobody's heard of before. We play a game.
Let me tell you something. Ping pong, aka table tennis, is the new NBA. What?
We play a game.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share, or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.